Coming up, the Brooklyn Nets battle at home against the Boston Celtics and come up a little bit short, 103-92. We'll break down another big performance from Kevin Durant, what Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and the Celtics did so well to disrupt the Nets' chances here, and whether or not we should really feel that bad taking on and ultimately losing to the odds-on favorite for the NBA title.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brooklyn, yo. Yes, friends, it is Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team. The Brooklyn Nets every single day. Over there, you're going to find Doug Norrie, owner-operator DFSR, for all your daily fantasy sports rankings. From DraftKings to FanDuel, he's got you covered. I'm Adam Armbrecht, breaking down the New York football Giants on the One Giant Podcast. My boy, Andy Mack, we thank you for making us your first listen of the day, free on all those great platforms. And Doug, I'm a little bit conflicted about how to feel about the Brooklyn Nets losing to the Celtics Sunday night game. We're coming in live, as we always do for most of our post games on YouTube, 103.92 set at the top. But it's a really good Boston Celtics team. So in some ways, I'm kind of going, I think we both are, glass mostly full on this one.
I wouldn't call it mostly full. I would call it
more full than of good.
I think you might have misread our pregame conversation about my feelings on this. No, it's definitely not full. I think where we are, it's funny about this game, right? So I think in a lot of ways,
hey, I guess coming out of this loss,
I think in a lot of ways, this game was so reminiscent of what happened last year in the playoffs, right? Like the sweep, and the reason that we were kind of had this game checked off on the calendar was that last year the Celtics, ceremoniously or unceremoniously, whichever way you want to look at it, swept the Nets out of the playoffs, and that was the end of the season. And that it kind of just encapsulated a really weird, poor season for the Nets, and it kind of couldn't have ended any other way. And then we've had a kind of a varying run through this year of what it's looked like for Brooklyn and how they've performed. And this was going to be a good measuring stick. It was finally a mostly healthy team, a team that's been absolutely awesome this year. They're without Marcus Smart. Okay, Nets were without Ben Simmons. So let's call that. I mean, I probably can't call it a wash, but they're both missing a high impact player. Let's call it that way. And this was going to be a good battleground, a testing ground. And I think what you ended up seeing was the Nets did certain things well. They did certain things really poorly. But in the end, it just felt a lot like the Celtics sweep last year, kind of right down to the same exact problems, like which we can go to. So I wouldn't call this like a bad loss by any means. I thought this game was pretty close all the way through, and the score actually probably doesn't even reflect probably how close the game was, because there was a few kind of things that went haywire late. But it still does exemplify some of the main problems for this team, which we'll get into. And I just felt like I was watching game five of that series. That's really how it felt. I mean, the intensity and stuff was there for the most part, but it just felt like game five of that playoff series with all the same recurring problems that the Nets had last year in April or whenever that actually happened.
Yeah, and I think, you know, early in this season, with everything that's gone on with Brooklyn, and the Celtics have essentially just been kind of picking up where they left off. They make, obviously, the change at the head coaching position, but the team feels like we know what our baseline was from last year. We made it to the finals. We come up short against Golden State, but that's what the expectations are, is for us to get right back to that spot. So for the Nets, and we've talked about beating up on some bad teams, kind of running into teams at the right time when they're missing 3, 4, 11 of their key players, it made it hard to get excited about wins. And I guess, like you say, you can never say glass mostly full on a loss. But I don't feel bad about the loss, because and it really was a couple of key sequences late, some sloppy turnovers, some giveaways, and this one balloons. The Nets had it down to 2 points in the fourth quarter. Now I will say, for the most part, over the course of this game, there wasn't a lot of stretches when they were down within single digits, only led 11-10 at one point, where I said, oh, the Nets, this is going to be a nail biter down to the wire here. Kind of felt more like you're trying to push this boulder uphill, and at some point, the ankle goes, and this thing just goes tumbling on you. And that's what it felt like in the last 2-3 minutes of this one. And overall, you highlighted it. Listen, the Nets have high-quality, top-end players like Kevin Durant. And I think, at least at this point of the season, There's way too many other pieces that need to sort themselves out. Second game back for TJ Warren, et cetera, that I don't know. You know, you can't incomplete. It just feels like, okay, like incomplete. And maybe just quickly, you mentioned about the end of the playoffs last year. Maybe that is what ultimately has me at the end of the game kind of going, all right, because that's what it was at the end of that series last year. It was like, oh, finally, the season's over. Like, we can just figure out what happens next, but at least this thing is done.
Yeah, so in this game, you know, going into some of the things that I think were a continued recurring issues for the Nets here, right? They obviously ran into a really, really good defensive team without two of their best defenders. I mean, Marcus Smart was Defensive Player of the Year, and Robert Williams has not been playing, but is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate when he's healthy. Like, he's that good. And still, the Nets struggled mightily in half-court offense and trying to figure out sort of how to crack the code on what Boston is doing. They didn't even throw tons and tons of double teams at Durant, but when they did, it was a problem. The Nets struggled to get into a rhythm, like sort of in a half-court offense flow, and you saw a lot of like late shot clock forced shots. Kyrie was terrible from an efficiency standpoint in this game, for sure. We'll talk about him. The Nets also just had a million unforced errors. Like, even, and this is where, like, it's hard to get too negative, right? Because the Nets, I thought, did tons of things well. They actually won the offensive rebounding game in this one. They won the turnover battle, right? Like, they won some places that they didn't even shoot terrible from three. They won in some places that you would think, oh, okay, this is like, these are really, really good signs. But then they just couldn't capitalize on certain stuff. Like I said, they couldn't get into half court sets all that well. They couldn't capitalize on when they did create turnovers, actually turning them into points. Like, did they turn any turnovers into points? I know they did some, but way fewer than the amount of opportunities they created for themselves. So it's just another situation where they create these, they do certain things sort of at like a high level. And the Celtics even at some point, like, let them, the Celtics did not play well here, right? Yeah. Like, this was not a very efficient and well-played game by the Celtics at all. And to some degree, that was a big part of why the Nets remain in the game. But I felt this way at times around the Celtics series last year. It was like, they're struggling with these certain things that the Celtics are throwing at them. And they're also just not doing themselves any favors when the Celtics actually do make a mistake, when they actually do turn the ball over, when Celtics had a million unforced errors. Like, Celtics couldn't capitalize. And I think that's where I can kind of talk myself into this scenario where I'm like, hey, actually that is solvable. Like, that is solvable for the team.
So I'll give you just that one, just because you brought it up. And I think the eye test would have suggested, and we're going to get into the Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all that stuff here in a second. 18 points off turnovers for the Brooklyn Nets on 17 turnovers. They actually played Boston even in that category. But when we're talking about the performance overall from Boston, 17 turnovers, Nets had fewer turnovers. Like, the statistical categories suggest that this one could have gone down to the wire, which is where, again, I'm going to say, wasn't a good game. You said it, from Boston. It wasn't a good game for them. It wasn't a perfect game for them by any stretch of the imagination. And it actually does have me coming back now to this score and saying, you know what, 103-92, yeah, that feels about right. Like, I don't think the Nets should have cracked 100 points in this game, mostly because what the supporting cast was capable of doing, or who you didn't have available for you there. And sometimes, and this isn't to bury the Nets coming out of this game in a lot of ways, when you're the Boston Celtics, when you're a high-end team, has a little bit of that, like, playing with your food kind of vibe. Like, hey, listen, Kevin Durant's a really dangerous weapon. We know that if Kyrie Irving is on one, we're going to have problems here. But if we play pretty smart basketball, if we do what we know we can do defensively when it matters most, guess what? Probably going to be fourth quarter, and we're probably going to be in a position to be up 2, 5, 6 points and looking to pull away. Like, I do think that the better, more consistent teams in the league have that sense of formula in their mind that even when all of their boxes aren't getting checked, they still feel like they can get themselves across the finish line, where the Nets have basically had a recipe of, is Kevin Durant going for 35 plus, and then is one other key role player stepping up on a game-to-game basis.
And that's why basketball in general is a very low variance game. On a night-to-night basis, it can be high variance because you can just miss all your shots, or, you know, miss a lot of threes and stuff like that. The ball cannot bounce your way over the course of a game. But over the course of a 7-game series, the variance is low. The best teams will usually win. And I think that's like the sense you sort of got from the Celtics game, right? It's that, like, the variance is low here. Like this, the Nets just couldn't do certain things that were going to get them over the hump. And it exemplifies itself even just in the score. And they talked about it on the broadcast, and you could see it with your own eyes. Whenever the Nets would make a run, they just couldn't get over the hump, right? Each time they would pull close, they pull close. And each time the Celtics would just go back 6-8 points of their own. And you just kind of, and it was just super deflating. You mentioned the points off turnovers. I agree with you that was tied at 18, but the points in transition with the Nets missed an unbelievable amount of opportunities on points in transition. Because while the turnovers are around even on those points, even though the Nets did force two more turnovers, those transition points, which should be literal layups, right? Like literal and figurative layups, were just not there for them. And these are like the little things where they just kind of chip away at their own opportunities to be able to win. So in general, on a high level, I do think this was sort of a lot of the same of that what to expect from Boston. And again, the Nets have a way to get better here with bringing back Simmons. The Celtics have a way to get better too, by bringing back by having Marcus Smart, having Robert Williams on the team too. So it's not like we can even make excuses along those lines. And yet this is kind of where I see this Nets team. And this is what we've been talking about leading up into this game, is like, this is kind of where I see them and envision them as a team. I want to get into Durant. We're going to talk way more about the rest of this, this one here in a second. First, going to tell you about our friends over at Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the US, UK, Canada, and Australia. Book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip, or you can grab a classic or luxury car for a special event, birthday, or holiday. Find affordable economy cars if you're on a budget and just need to get from A to B. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring car rentals and find your drive at Turo.com.
So as you said here, the Brooklyn Nets lose 103-92 in this game. We'll talk about a little bit of Kyrie Irving and what was, we'll say, a lackluster performance. Sometimes, again, 18 points doesn't tell you the whole story of his game. But when it comes to the highest level, Kevin Durant, it's another 13 of 24, gets to the line 5 times. We know a lot of his work is predicated on not getting fouled. 31 points in this one. The 8 turnovers is a problem, but again, sometimes I feel like there's the fatigue factor associated with that, of like when you're playing 40 minutes a night and you know you need to come out, you know it's all on your shoulders. It's not an excuse, it's just a reality. Like he had at least two in the fourth quarter that strictly felt like he was just laboring to get himself across midcourt and get himself into the offensive set. He is the guy, though, when you look at a matchup like this and you know how good Boston is defensively, you go, yeah, not going to be a problem for him, though. And he continues to find ways to get to his spots and get his shots.
Okay, my earphones went out there for a second, so just tell me who you're talking about right there at the end.
Kevin Durant crushing it. He is defense proof when you're talking about playing even a good defense like Boston.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I thought you were talking about KD, and then my AirPods went out. Okay, so yeah, with KD, this is another one of these games where it's like, okay, they were going to push the minutes all the way up for him, and that was going to make sense. And I think that we're always going to be in a situation, probably from now until the end of the season, where they're going to live and die with what Durant does. Like, I think that's just the scenario that they're going to be in, and that's just the way it's going to be now to the end. So I think you're going to have to live. I think you're going to have to live with what the mistakes are. And this game had some mistakes in it, but I think that's just what you get. You can't come out of this game and take any digs at Durant, right? Like, I don't think, even with a lot of the turnovers, even with some eight turnovers in this game, a lot of them kind of unforced. Some of them probably just, you know, games just getting away from you.
Factor, just the grind of going through 40 minutes, right?
Right. You're pushing in a weird way, and that's going to be it. But I think that we're probably just going to have this be part of the Kevin Durant experience from now to the end of the season, because I think this is just how the team is built right now. I think there's ways that it can get better. Like, I think TJ Warren's going to add a little piece to this where they're going to be able to placate, or they're going to be able to get away with some of those minutes. We'll definitely just see more efficient Kyrie Irving games at other times. So it's like, I don't think we should worry about it. But with Durant, I think this is when you are going to have the ball a lot, when you're going to be putting ISOs a lot, when you're going to get double teamed a lot. There are certain teams that are just going to force turnovers to you. I still stand by the part where Kevin Durant is like what you said, Kevin Durant's basically unguardable, but there are going to be times where he's like a little more guardable. and those are times when the rest of the team is just not going to, if it's not going to work around it, or even worse, they just turn into turnovers. Like, so you never even get it. Give the other guys on the team a chance to like make a shot or whatever. It's just going to be super hard to win those games. And unfortunately, I do think that's repeatable for what the Celtics bring. I don't think every team can bring that, but the Celtics can definitely make that a repeatable process in KD.
Well, and that's a part of it too, because you mentioned there, yeah, more defendable Kevin Durant. And then, but then the trickle down from that is that the Boston Celtics are a team that can also defend the secondary option, defend the third, the supporting cast, right? So they can stay at home. You know, they talked about it on the broadcast, and we've mentioned it too, about teams, the double team. Now, there was a stretch when teams were doing it, and Kevin Durant worked out of that, and the Nets punished other teams for doing it. But then there's also the other side of it where you go, yeah, and guess what? Staying at home is kind of a strong method, and even more so for Boston, who actually probably likes a lot of their plus matchups here. And they don't need to bring
those doubles right. all the time. Like right. they have enough.
You live with the results on some of these.
Grant Williams, Tatum, like Jaylen Brown, Horford, even like they have guys. And then you know when Smart's around, like they have guys where they're not going to need the W every time. Last year they could do it because it was like, well, the Nets literally had nobody else, right? So you might as well just do it. But in this one, they didn't even throw a million doubles at them because I think they felt okay with a lot of the way the matchups were gonna go down. And then at times they were just going to kind of maybe surprise them or scram on them or whatever it was going to be.
And I want to talk, we're going to talk about here coming in a minute, two key role players for each team in this one that I also think were a critical factor. But so it's Jason Tatum and it's obviously Kevin Durant. And when you go look at Tatum's line from this game, it feels exactly the same. He goes through his motions, finds himself 10-19 from the field, gives you that 29-point performance. This is where I do just want to bring up that, and this isn't a knock on this specific game or Kyrie Irving in general, but it is about the mold of player. Like if Jason Tatum is the best player on the Boston Celtics and you're thinking about who do you want to pair with him? Kevin Durant's the best player on the Brooklyn Nets and how do you want to pair off of him? When you go look at a Jaylen Brown line who had a nice offensive game, obviously, 34, nice. Sorry, could have been underselling that a little bit there. Had a great offensive night for himself, 10 of 20.
Yeah.
5 of 9 from the field, 9 of 11 getting to the free throw line as well, right? 10 rebounds in this game. So like, but then you go a little bit deeper, 2 steals, 4 blocks. Like, yes, he had a great offensive game. Even if he wasn't having that great offensive game, even if he was having more of an off night like Kyrie Irving did shooting, it's the other elements of their game that make it so much better and so much more beneficial to your highest level, highest superstar talent. And this is, we've talked about this at a high level, so I'm not even necessarily putting this at the feet of Kyrie Irving in this game or overall, but at the highest level, guards, if you're going to be an undersized player, if you're going to get caught in switches, if you're not going to be the best defensive player, well, then you need to be Kevin Durant level elite with what you do on the offensive end night in, night out. Otherwise, a night like this, 7 of 21 for Kyrie Irving, kind of falls in and out of the ebb of the game. That's the difference. Like you lose 103-92 and you look at his box score, you can pretty easily say we're talking about who are the 4 best players on the court. There they are. 3 out of 4 performed at a high level. Kyrie Irving has an off night shooting and that spells it because he's not going to impact the game on the other end of the floor the same way that a Jaylen Brown's going to.
Oh yeah. And I think at times he was sort of a negative on the defensive end, lost a couple of his assignments a few times. There was a Hauser 3 where it was just Kyrie was just like floated and was guarding nobody I'm not even just picking out that one thing. I mean, these have like been high profile sort of like defensive lapses from him over the course of the season where it just doesn't, it's, there's not enough tracking. And the problem with that is with Kyrie is that you're right. If the offense isn't going to be all the way there, then you're really stuck because he's just not going to do enough on the defensive end. This is not even like really a Kyrie knock. Like we like Kyrie. It's just that this is going to be the result of what happens in games like this. Like he's not enough. He doesn't bring enough two-way stuff to be able to withstand lots of inefficient games. Of course, guys will be inefficient from time to time. Like that is just, if you're going to be a volume shooter and the Nets need him to be a volume shooter with the way their offense is constructed, like he is going to have inefficient games. The problem is that when those inefficient games happen, not enough is going to happen in the two-way game. And you are going to lose a lot of those games because there's just not enough way to make it up. And this was one of those games. And this, as we saw in the Celtics series last year, just to go back to the top, this is a problematic matchup for him. They're so big, like they're big everywhere, even without Smart, bringing in guys like Brogdon. Derek White plays bigger than his frame and everyone else is pretty huge. I mean, they got lucky with some Peyton Pritchard minutes here just because Smart didn't play, but for the most part, he's going to be like a negative in almost every defensive assignment this team, because the Celtics are just a really, really big team. And again, this just goes back to it. Like, this is why this team, this kind of team, is going to give the Nets problems. The Nets can still beat this team on really efficient nights, like really efficient Kyrie nights, which I think what he will have in him. Like, this is a really winnable game. But when it doesn't happen, you kind of just know what the score is going to be. Like, you can just, you can kind of know it.
Yeah, balanced Boston team, deep team, even when they're missing key players, consistent team when you talk about guys in behind them here. You mentioned Malcolm Brogdon coming up here in a second. I want to look at specifically him and another role player for the Brooklyn Nets and the contrast of their two performances and how they contributed to this loss for Brooklyn.
All right, first we're going to talk to you about our friends over at betonline.net, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. You get all the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. Right now, betonline.net, Celtics plus 330 to win the championship. That are the best. Those are the best odds in all of basketball. The Bucks a little behind them, plus 600. Warriors plus 650. So Nets plus 1100. Gotta climb up there. Bet online. I can't disagree with it though. This is where our friends over at Bet Online get it right. They're the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. Head on over to the website today. Use that mobile device to learn more. Bet online, where the game starts.
Okay, so you mentioned it there in the last segment, Malcolm Brogdon, and I really did think, I mean, this is a pretty high-level thing, but when you take a look at the first players that are coming in off the bench or guys that you would think would be key contributors, this is a great move that Boston made. When you bring in a Malcolm Brogdon, he's going to come in for 32 minutes, only 4 of 10 from the field, but he gives you 13 points. He gives you 8 assists. He gives you 8 rebounds, right? So there's a lot of things that he ends up doing really well for you, and 13 points, like, playing in the margins here, losing by double digits, about 10, 11 points, you need someone who's going to be able to come in and step up here. And this is where I thought the Nets really suffered at the hands of Seth Curry's night tonight. 14 minutes, no points, yeah, only takes one shot. And guess why? Because he gets four fouls in the first 6 seconds of the game. He can't be out there and be effective. Now, the reality that he is on the smaller side, there's going to be a lot of bad matchups in this game for him no matter what. And we're talking about Kyrie looking bad defensively. I think Curry would have been a real liability there too. And also, you need to, if you're out there and you're spacing the floor and knocking down some of those perimeter shots, it can help change a little bit about what the Celtics have to do defensively. He never even gets a chance to get his feet off the ground in this game. And all of a sudden, you're down another key offensive contributor when you're already missing a couple other players. Specifically, listen, whatever he is or isn't, Yuta Watanabe had been a guy they relied on. So now you're down two of your better perimeter shooters this season.
Yeah, and you're down perimeter shooting, and there's a reason. Like, Seth had problems in this series last year too, because he's too small. Like, he's just too small for a lot of what he's getting switched onto, a lot of what he's being asked to do. Like, and you mentioned Brogdon. Like, Brogdon's the perfect signing for this team. You know, there's some injury risk with him for the most part, and that was like the only thing that really drove his stock down. But he played 32 minutes, like basically starter's minutes, which you can kind of see coming as soon as Smart was ruled out of this game. Mm-hmm. But he's another one where it's like, hey, he can stand up to defensive switches. He can knock down the three. He can do some on-ball creation. You want a little bit out of that, out of Seth, and this isn't like a total dig on him. But this, again, like, there's just too many problems for this Nets team with this particular squad, right? Like, and yeah, you're going to run into foul trouble when you're just running, trending smaller than the other team. You're going to turn the ball over when you don't have enough offensive creation. Like, these are just things that are like kind of predictable. It's kind of predictable that's going to happen. I don't think you can predict 4 fouls in, you know, 10 seconds or whatever Curry had in this game. Like, that's really kind of like nut low territory.
Yeah.
But it's also not crazy surprising. It's like sort of Kyrie light in this scenario, mm-hmm. right? It's like the only way that he's going to be really a plus guy in matchups like this is if he's getting threes and knocking them all down. Because if he's not, you're going to get scenarios like this where he's like getting put into really tough defensive matchups. He's going to have to gamble because he's going to have to gamble on entry passes. He's going to have to gamble on different stuff. And sometimes that stuff will work. And sometimes you're just going to get fouls because you kind of just don't have a choice.
And the downhill effect of that too is, because we talked about this before in the season, I thought, you know, Joe Harris having an overall okay game for you, goes 5 of 10 from the field, obviously 3 of 5 from beyond the arc. So the 3-point shooting has been there for you. But the one that jumped out was Curry's not in this game anymore. Brogdon checks in. And this is literally just the flash in my mind. It's Brogdon gets the ball just inside the arc. Joe Harris is on the switch on him. And he's like, guess what? I'm going to take you off the dribble and blow past you to the basket because I'm quicker. And we talked about this. quicker players. All of a sudden, Joe Harris gets put into a spot you don't want him defensively to have to be in, but based on injuries and who has foul trouble, all of a sudden he is. And then the Boston Celtics are taking advantage of the third and fourth best matchup that they came into the game looking at because of the way the Nets are currently playing. And again, goes back to the top of this for me, where it's not only are the Nets missing Ben Simmons, and no two ways about it, that's an impact player.
I think it's huge, man. Like, sorry, just to interrupt. Like, they need his length bad in a game like this, because it's not like Boston's half court offense at times is like some kind of world beating offense. Like, they are going to run it through Tatum and run it through Brown. Simmons is like the perfect counter to those guys.
Like, and this is where I know, like you mentioned Marcus Smart, like obviously he's going to be a big factor if he's playing in this game, but specifically to what the Nets lack and what Ben Simmons has, that's why it feels so critical. And then what, you know, what Boston, as you say, are going to want to do offensively. It's just the switchability, the way that he could probably start to stagnate things at the point of attack at the top of the key at times, like all of those little elements would have been really useful in this game.
Totally.
And then without it, again, without it, you don't have, there's not another, you know, again, there's not another guy that you go to from there. And the one thing you can, any other closing thoughts you want to have on this game, but I do think I just wanted to make sure we mention, because we didn't do a post game after Friday's game where TJ Warren made his return for the Brooklyn, or debut for the Brooklyn Nets, I should say, played 18 minutes in this game. Again, a relatively quiet night, but you're starting to see, I think, when we go back and talk about no Edmund Sumner in this game either, but Sumner, Warren, Watanabe, right? Royce O'Neal, all the players that they brought in this offseason. You see exactly what they're trying to accomplish. Let's get a little bit longer. Let's have a little bit more offensive versatility for us. The problem is, which has been a theme, they can't quite fully get there all together to this point of the season. But I just thought it was worth highlighting. TJ Warren looks like he's at least going to slowly be getting his legs underneath him, but I wouldn't set the high bar of expectation in the short term, which is something you really banged home ahead of his debut.
I think it's going to end up, as long as he stays healthy, that this was probably a really, really excellent signing. I think he just needs, he's had too much time off. So I'm still just kind of holding out on him. Yeah. I think it's going to be positive. And it's just going to be at times look a little bit like tonight. And like, you know, he's going up really against really good defenders, and that's going to be hard to get your sea legs under you, just in any situation. And you're totally right about like the player, that we were missing, right? Like having those Simmons minutes turn into like some Cam Thomas minutes, let's say. I know it's not one for one, but having Cam Thomas
gotta
come
fill
in
the minutes,
because Cam's got to come in now that Seth Curry is in foul trouble, right? Yep. Like, these are really tough trade-offs against, really against any team, but especially against Boston, because now those guys, just to hammer this home again, those guys have to be so hyper efficient for it to make sense and work. And the second they're not, it's just going to be a problem every single time. And so it was the Kyrie thing with the efficiency. It's Curry with the efficiency. It's Cam with the efficiency. These are the guys, not Kyrie so much in this example, but these are the guys whose minutes you need to play more minutes when you're missing some of the other players that would actually be better fits for the matchup, right? Yeah. This is a really bad cascading effect. And
handcuff Jacques Vaughn a little bit to say, hey, a little tweak here in my rotations where I want to set up my best matchups here. Now, all of a sudden, you're just saying, well, I got to put bodies out there.
I don't think there was really many moves here. Like, I think the moves were just to play KD 42 minutes or something, like which I thought was like definitely on the table here. Right. Yeah. He played 40. And I thought there was a case to not sit him at the beginning of the fourth quarter and just roll with it, because he had 2 days off. And at that point, because it's like, well, what move are we making here? And I think KD was pretty gassed at the end. I think that's where some of those turnovers came from. And that's the other thing that's going to happen is when you have to just play such a huge load. He had a huge defensive assignment too. He got a lot of Tatum matchups here. Like, he had to do a lot of recovery stuff. When you said those guys were getting blown by, like, he had a couple recovery blocks just because either he got blown by and then had to recover, or someone else lost their man and he had to just get to the rim, and he's 7 feet. And this is why he has a lot of blocks this year. But all this stuff kind of piles up. It all piles up against the undermanned Blazers of the world, the undermanned Pacers, or that's a bad example because they lost that game. But like these other teams, it doesn't pile up as much because those other teams are far less complete, right? Yeah. They're just not as good teams.
And so the ask on both ends becomes that much reduced. So you don't have
like you can just
down
and, the and even the Nets. And look, the Nets have even struggled in some of those matchups too. So it hasn't all been perfect. With the Celtics team, even without Smart, this is just such a good team, and they just present all the different kinds of problems. So, and this is why, in some ways, we came into the top of the show. I guess we'll quite close out here in a second. We came to the show really not all that disappointed, because I thought in a lot of ways the Nets played okay here. I think they did some things really pretty well. They just had a lot of unforced errors or things that looked like unforced errors because the Celtics are a really good team and maybe they were a little more forced than I thought. And in some ways I'm like, those things can be cleaned up and like this game could swing the other way. But I don't know. I could just be telling myself a story with that.
No, I mean, listen, all the way through the third quarter. Now, it's a bad quarter, I think, for both teams in some ways. But the Boston had 13 points in the third quarter, and there was a run there to start it. Like, the Nets were down coming out of the half. They came out, showed good defensive intensity, made some of the little plays, forced some turnovers. Like, I think we're just kind of getting Boston a little bit back on their heels. It was just more like, could you sustain this for the full 48? And no, the Brooklyn Nets couldn't. So while the phrasing could never be that my cup is almost entirely full following a loss on the Brooklyn Nets, I think to your point, like, this is where when you and I coming out of three game winning streak and you look at the matchups, four game, you go, all right, but you know, when we're looking at the teams they're playing here, it's going to be hard for me to get totally hyped on it beyond Kevin Durant's epic performances. This is a loss where I come out of it going, hey, really good challenge, and you guys, you came close to holding up to that test. And again, neither team at 100% full strength, but I can make the case there's a lot of things to be like, hey, all right, maybe we can get to that point if we get some of these other things to fall into place for us here. And we're just a healthy squad, long way to go in the season. So listen, 2 days off until Wednesday when they'll play again, we'll be doing the podcast, but you're going to be hard for me to come out of this one and say, what a tragedy. And I've been pointing the needle down often over the course of the season. This isn't going to be one of those nights.
Yeah. Look, last year in the playoff series, they lost they got swept in the four games, but they only lost by a combined 18 points. Like, that was, the series was close. You never felt like they really had much of a chance in the series. But it was always
physicality. That's all it is. I mean,
but it was always just like, just enough. It was always just enough. Like, the Celtics had just a little bit more. And that was just the other case. That was the same thing that will happen here tonight. They just had, in the end, the Celtics just seemed to have a little bit more. Okay. We'll hang out here in YouTube for a little bit. A reminder that we are on live on YouTube after these games. The Nets don't play again until Wednesday, but make sure in the meantime, you are jumping over to Locked On Nets YouTube. Hit subscribe, climbing toward 4,000 subscribers over there. Really appreciate everyone that's jumped on. We'll hang around here for a few extra minutes, but make sure you hit subscribe over to Locked On Nets YouTube.
Champions have the courage to keep turning the pages because they know a better chapter lies ahead. Paula White.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.